I walked up the steps.
Okay, we are back on the record. It is approximately 1:15, and prior to the break, MDU had just completed the presentation of its case, so we can go ahead and proceed with Capital Electric. Mr. Olson, you can call your first witness.
I'm going to call Mr. Ron Lipp.
Mr. Lipp, perjury is a Class C felony in North Dakota, punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you state your name for the record?
Ron Lipp.
And what is where are you currently employed?
Capital Electric.
And what is your position there?
I'm the manager of engineering and operations.
And how long have you served in that capacity?
27 years.
Okay. Can you tell me what your education background is?
I went to BJC. It's now BSC, and then I went to Fargo, NDSU.
And what did you get your degree in?
I got my degree in electrical engineering.
Okay. Did you have any other experiences in engineering that you brought to Capital Electric before?
Yeah, I was. Right out of college, I went to work for Finley Engineering for 7 years, and then I went to SSNR, their consultant, for 8 years, and then Lars hired me.
Okay. Are you familiar with the area that is southeast of the village of McKenzie where MDU is asked to serve?
I am.
Okay. Did Menards contact you regarding serving electricity in this on this site?
Yes, they did.
Can you look at Exhibit A that I have up there? It's not in the binder. It is. Yep. This is. Can you tell me what this document is?
This is our application for service for if you're a new member.
Okay, and the company name there in the top left is Menard Inc. And the contact person was Jesse Kane. Is that who you had contact with?
10-4. He was in my office, yes.
Okay. And so this was executed in the bottom right-hand corner on what date?
10-16-13.
Okay. And so is this, why did you receive this?
Well, he requested service from Capital Electric, and this is what we do. I mean, if somebody wants service, they have to fill out an application, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I guess I'd like to offer Exhibit A just to...
Mr. Kuntz, any objection? Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
Exhibit A is admitted.
If you can open up Exhibit B there, Mr. Lipp. Was this map created by you or at your direction?
Yes, it was.
And can you tell me what this depicts?
Well, this is the Capital Electric's facilities in the vicinity of this new Menards site.
Okay. The purple or red circle that's in the middle, is that, what type of radius is that around the site?
That's a one-mile radius around
okay,
the site.
And the blue or, it looks like it's a blue line,
yeah,
the larger correct. Circle, what is that depicting?
That's a two-mile radius.
Okay. And so this depicts your transmission, your electric system in this area that surrounds the Menards site. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Before he testifies, I'd like to offer this as Exhibit B.
Mr.
Objection.
Kuntz? Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
Exhibit B is admitted.
And if Mr. Lipp's lapel mic is on, I would ask him to allow to come over here and stand by this sign. We don't have a PowerPoint, but he can then point out stuff rather than... pointing from there. Is that okay?
Yep, he may. Go ahead.
So, Ron, first off, can you go ahead and kind of show us where the interstate is on this map?
Okay, the interstate is this. It's red and white like a candy cane, right?
Okay. And can you describe in some sort of detail your transmission lines that you have in this area?
Okay, our transmission line is on the bottom or south side of the interstate. It's a line with two circles. That's a transmission symbol.
Yep.
So it goes, you know, it goes around and it goes.
So it pretty much is parallel to the interstate. Is that correct?
On the south side, that's correct.
Okay, and where is MDU's transmission?
They're on the north side. You can see theirs too.
Okay. The large highlighted yellow portion, what is that?
That's the quarter that Menards purchased.
Okay, so that's the site that that MDU has asked to serve. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's just go just north of the site. Can you tell us where your distribution lines come in to serve the area that's right around the vicinity of the site?
Okay, well, we have a underground three-phase line on the south side just underneath our transmission line. Our transmission line is overhead. So we have a three-phase line on the south side of the interstate. And then we've got a single-phase underground line that goes down to Old 10. And then it goes, you know, it goes overhead over to here. And it goes overhead surrounding this new site. But that's single-phase.
Okay. So You're speaking of it being underground along the interstate. Can you tell me how that helps with the increased reliability of the electric service?
Well, it's underground, so you don't get the exposure from ice or wind or tree branches. That's underground line. Mostly now we put in all underground line.
So in your opinion, is that more reliable than the overhead?
Oh, yeah.
Is MDU's... do they have underground service in this area, or is it mainly overhead?
It's mainly overhead.
Okay. Do you know if it's all overhead?
No, I don't. It looks like it's overhead, but,
So that does increase the reliability then based on the factors you just said?
That's correct.
Okay. So coming south from the interstate, there is a hashed line that says 2010. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our underground line.
And is that when that was put in?
Yes.
That's when the underground was put in?
That's correct.
Was there overhead before that?
Yes, there was overhead before that, and I'm thinking it was a 1948 vintage, because there's a... So we had and the guy's farming that, so he, rather than upgrade the poles, we just buried it.
Okay. Can you tell me what on the map would let the commission know that... It signifies that it is capital customers.
Oh, these little circles.
Okay.
You know, that's... Okay. These triangles are enclosures for the underground.
So it's the black circles that are customers.
Right.
How many total customers do you have in that 2-mile radius?
I'm thinking 11.
Let's talk specifically about a couple of the customers that you have that surround the site. So it comes directly south underground. Number 40, I see a customer number 40 there.
Yeah.
You tell us what type of service that is.
That's a farmhouse. He's got shelter belts and stuff, so he's been there quite a long time.
Okay. So you come, and then if you go directly west, you have overhead single phase that is right adjacent to the Menard site, is that correct?
That's correct, on the north side of Highway 10.
And then you drop south to customer 32.
Right.
We heard testimony today, but that is, you do serve customer 32.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And then it appears that your system wraps around the Menard site to go to 44. What is number 44?
That's a signal light for the railroad.
Okay. And you know when that was, when you installed that?
I have on here 1983, so I'm assuming in 1983.
Okay. Basically, it appears to me that you wrap around the northwest and the south side. Is it your understanding that if MDU is going to serve this site, they are going to have to cross your facilities?
Yeah,
you know
that's
where
correct.
That would be at approximately?
Well, it could be on the north side of 10, or if they sneak on the south side, it could be on the south side of 10, but they'd have to cross the single-phase line to serve, you know, you can see the line. So they'd have to cross it either here or here.
Okay. And can you point just quickly where the infrastructure is right now for the village of McKenzie? Where would that be on the map?
on the north side of the interstate. On
no, no, where the city is.
I'm sorry, right here.
Okay.
Your Honor, if I could, I think that if these cases ever get appealed, we have to have something better than right here on the record. So maybe you might want to clean up some of those answers.
Okay.
So basically, it would be the city of McKenzie would be north of Highway 10 and east of
236th Street. Okay. That's correct. Right in this corner.
Okay. And so I'll ask a few more clarifying questions to clean up the record. So the customer 42 is just to the northeast of the Menards site. Is that correct, based on where you were pointing? Customer 40.
Oh, that's correct.
Okay. And customer 32 is directly to the west of the service or the site, the Menards site.
Yes, that's correct.
And 44 is directly south of the Menards site.
That's correct.
Okay, but you have an overhead line that is literally going across the north and then on the west side and halfway's going into the, actually on the site.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Can you tell me what substation that Capital Electric would serve the Menards site if they are going to serve it?
From our Minocan substation.
Okay, and can you tell me where that would be located? It's not on the map, but where would it be?
8 miles. Well, it's 8 miles from this, you know, mile north, and then the town of Minocan, and it's right on Old 10, on the south side of Old 10.
So it would be just off the map on the west side.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this substation. Is there anything particularly of importance that's going to affect maybe the reliability of this substation and the electricity to this site?
Well, we have our Minocan substation is automated, and what that means is we have our breakers automated and our transmission switches automated, so if there is a breaker operation, it alarms our headquarters building at Capital Electric. Then we can take a light pen and take the light pin and shove it on the screen, and it'll close the breaker without having to go out there. It'll just show us that it's open or closed, too.
Okay.
It's kind of a nice feature.
So it gives you some benefits to react real-time to things that you would not be able to do if it was not automated.
That's correct.
You might as well come in. I think you can sit up front for now for the rest of this. Does this Minocan substation that we just spoke about, does it have sufficient capacity right now to serve the Menards site?
Yes, it does.
Okay. At your direction, did you do a voltage study as to the load? After you received the information from Menards, did you have a voltage study done?
Yeah, from our consultant engineer, HDR.
Okay. And did you see anything troubling about what you received in that report?
No.
So your voltage and everything in capacity is fine?
That's correct.
No concerns whatsoever? Does Capital have any other substations that they can use to serve the area?
And we have one to the east. We call it Sterling Substation.
Okay, and if my memory serves me right, that is actually depicted by the X that is on the far side of the map on the east. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So that would be the Sterling substation?
That's the Sterling substation.
Okay. With the potential of having two substations serve this area, does that, in your opinion, speak to reliability that can Capital have to serving this site?
Yes, it does. That way, you know, if our Minocan substation, we have a problem with that, we can backfeed it through our Sterling substation.
Okay. If you would look to what's been marked as Exhibit see. You can look at that, please. Right now you spoke about how going from your line that's parallel to the interstate and you have to drop south, that's a single-phase underground. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if you're going to serve this Menards site, what are you going to have to do to bring it up to snuff to serve this capacity?
I'm going to have to put in two more phases.
Okay.
And what that involves, I'd have to go up to on the interstate, come out of that enclosure, and plow in two cables parallel to that single-phase line going south now along 249th Street.
Okay.
We'd go south to Old Tent, and then we'd have to bore the road and then put an enclosure on their site there.
Okay. Exhibit C, it's in caption at the top, 1 mile line extension, the prices. Was this created by you or at your direction?
Yes, it was.
And can you describe what this is telling us with...
It tells you how much it's going to cost Capital Electric to bring in two phases from the interstate down to the site.
Okay. So can you tell me what the grand total is for you to upgrade that system to be able to get three phase on that site?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, what was it, $44,527.31.
Okay. So that's the total, that's what Capital Electric would have to do to serve the area, spend that amount of money to get to the site.
To the site, that's correct.
Okay. I guess I'd like to offer Exhibit C into evidence.
No objection.
No objection, Your Honor.
Exhibit C is admitted.
If you can go to the binder now that Mr. Kuntz has there for you, I just want to talk a little bit about the cost that MDU is going to have if they get this load. Can you go to Exhibit 5? This is describing a project total of extending the 1,800 feet that's going to extend their service from south of the city east to the location. And the cost is $32,619 for that piece that they have to do. Does that dollar amount seem reasonable to you?
Yes.
Nothing out of the ordinary?
No.
Okay. If you would look at 6, this is MDU's estimate to... Well, I'll come to that later. Go to number 7, please. The first page of 7 is the upgrades that MDU would be required to do to serve this load, and that's $61,451. We heard testimony that included a depreciated transformer, but with that being said, with that taken into account, does that $61,000 seem reasonable to you? Anything to question?
Nope.
Okay. And then the second page of MDU 7 is the conversion from the Delta to Y, also with some conversion of 1,200 feet of single phase to overhead three phase. That dollar amount they have at $32,562, does that seem reasonable to you as well?
Yeah.
So there's really no reason to dispute those numbers.
Nope.
So your cost to get to the site is roughly $44,000, correct?
That's correct.
And their total to get there is approximately $126,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
There was a lot of discussion when what was Steve's last name? Steve testified from Menards.
Manor.
He had a lot of concern about the three-phase breaker or the three-phase interrupter because of the motors that they're going to be running and how that can have effect on various things. At the Minocan substation, do you already have that? Is that already presently there?
That's correct. But
is it hooked up currently in that capacity?
No.
What would you have to do to convert? I don't know if it's conversion or what would you have to do to make that change to what he's requesting?
Well, what we have now, we call it a Nova triple single, and that's the name of a breaker. So the triple single, you can have single-phase trip. That means you can have it for A phase, B phase, C phase, or you can gang them all together, and it'll trip out all three phases if there's a fault on one phase. But with our consumers,
we only have, we use it as a single, so that if a phase goes, if we, a squirrel goes up a tree or something or up a pole and causes an outage, just the A phase breaker will trip and the B and C will stay in service with for the other consumers. So, but for a three-phase load, we could switch a switch and it'll knock out all, so if that squirrel knocks out that transformer, it'll knock out all three phases. So then everybody will be out until we go out and, you know, clear the squirrel or hit the light pin and try to energize it. Or.
So you would be able to do that with no added cost?
That's correct.
If you would go to Exhibit D, which is in caption, building site prices. Was this created by you at your direction?
Yes, it was.
And can you tell me what this is?
This is, once we get to the site, this is what it's going to cost us to serve the buildings at the site.
Okay. And were these exact information given to you, or were you extrapolating this based on some information that they gave you?
We used their map and their and the information that they gave us, and we came up with the transformer size and the footages.
Okay. I'd like to offer Exhibit D into evidence.
Any objection, Mr. Koontz?
No objection.
Mr. Norrell?
No, Your Honor.
Exhibit D is admitted.
So the total amount that you would be spending on location if you were to serve this load is what?
$65,696.30.
So if you would go quickly to MDU Exhibit 6, this is their cost that they've given us, that MDU has given us to serve the site, and that was just over $66,000. So you would have no issues with his prices then either? You guys are within a very close range.
Yeah, it looks, yeah.
Okay. In your opinion, Ron, would MDU allowing to serve the site result in some wasteful duplication?
Yes, it would.
And how would, in your judgment, how would that be?
Well, we're right there, you know, and they have to cross under our line, and you know, we wouldn't be here if Ron Lipp wanted to build a house out there. So they're just looking at the big load.
And you already have adequate capacity to serve the area without doing anything, is that correct?
Well, we have to put in that mile of.
Yes, but at the substation by itself, you don't have to upgrade anything there. So would MDU be duplicating your load that's already, your capacity that's already there?
Yes.
I have nothing further for this witness.
Mr. Koontz?
Thank you. Mr. Lipp, I believe you testified that Capital Electric's nearest three-phase line is approximately how far from this Menard site?
A mile.
So you don't have a line, a three-phase line within a mile. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I believe you testified the line that runs south from the interstate and then across north of the Menards property and then again south is a single-phase line. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that single-phase line, is that all over, all underground or part overhead?
Just the dashed is underground and the solid is overhead. So it's overhead along the whole north side of Menards. It's overhead along the west side and overhead down to the signal light for the railroad station.
And if for you to extend service to Menards, what portion of that line are you going to rebuild or add or over?
Just the mile from the interstate down to Old 10. We have an underground line in there now, single phase, so we're going to put in the plow and put in two more phases.
So the line that you have that runs on the north side of the Menards property, you're not going to be using that to serve Menards. You have to answer out loud.
No. Okay.
And then the single-phase line that runs along the western boundary of the Menards property on the other side of the property, you're not going to be using that to serve Menards, are you?
That's correct.
So that line won't be involved at all?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Well, it still needs to be in place to serve those consumers.
Right, but not for purposes of serving Menards.
No.
So crossing Montana-Dakota's construction of its three-phase line beneath that single-phase line is really not duplicating that single-phase line, is it? I mean, because that single-phase line is not going to be used to serve Menards.
No.
And you said there were, 11 customers within 2 miles of that Menards site?
Yes.
And how many customers do you have within 1 mile of the Menards site?
4, the way I count it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Let's talk about your Minocan substation. How far away is that substation from the Menards site as it follows the line?
8 miles.
And you said you had someone calculate the voltage drop along that line?
Sure did.
And who did that?
HDR engineers. They're our consulting engineers.
What did they calculate would be the voltage drop from the substation to the Menards site?
To the Menards site, I guess I can't. It's within the ANSI standards.
Within 5%?
Yeah. Well, it's, because we, at the substation, we go 126, and out at the end of the line, if it's 118, we're good, and if it's 117, we'll add a bank of regulators halfway through or something. But it's within the 118 volts.
So did you have to add some equipment along the way in order to meet the voltage,
nope.
Keep the voltage standards?
Nope.
I thought you talked to...
We have regulators at the substation.
Okay.
But according to HDR study, we don't need any voltage regulators with this 1 megawatt load for the existing line.
You don't need to add any regulators.
That's correct.
And so the length of the line, though, from the Minocan substation to the Menards site is about 8 miles.
That's correct.
Is that an underground line, you said?
It is.
Is that a cross-length polyethylene conductor line?
260 mil. It's a 14.4 volt. We put bigger insulation on it when we put it in.
And that was built in 1976.
That's correct.
Isn't it the case, Mr. Lipp, that cross-linked polyethylene conductor was notorious for having problems with faults?
Yes, and prior to 74, this is 76, and like I said, that was 175 mil. We jacked it up to 260 mil, so this is actually 25 kVA cable that we're energizing it at 7,200.
So have you had any fault history on this line?
No faults.
No faults at all?
A couple of splices let loose, but no faults.
And how far back? Did you have any outage history along this line that you provided?
They were asking me that at noon. I think last year we had one. The prior year we had two. I think 5 in the last 6 years.
You also mentioned that you could serve this load from your Sterling substation.
That's correct.
What's your capacity of your Sterling substation?
450.
So 450 wouldn't be sufficient to serve this load, would it?
Maybe one building.
Okay. So to serve this...
Upgrade the Sterling sub.
Did you calculate what would be necessary for you to upgrade a Sterling substation to serve this load?
We'd have to put in a bigger tub.
And tub, you mean transformer?
Transformer, I'm sorry.
Did you perform any calculations to do that?
Probably be similar to what you guys have to pay.
Do you have any used transformers available that you'd be able to utilize?
Central Power has bought our transmission line and our substation, so I'm sure they've got transformers.
And what's the distance from the Sterling sub?
5 miles.
So unless you upgraded that Sterling sub, basically, you would only be able to serve that full load for Minocan.
That's correct.
And that would basically...
The whole load for Minocan. Otherwise, right. Yeah, we could maybe serve a couple buildings.
In extending service from the interstate down to the Menard site where you'll be paralleling or adding two phases to your existing line, do you consider that you're duplicating your existing line doing that?
No, because that's only a single-phase line. We have to get three-phase to the site, so no.
No further questions.
Mr. Norell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Lipp, I'd like to ask a couple more questions about the Sterling substation, realizing that sounds like that needs some upgrading. You talked about the triple, single, three-phase breaker. Is that in place at Sterling, or would that need to be put in?
That need to be added.
Do you have any projections as to voltage difference between the Sterling substation and the load here proposed at MDU should something happen at the Minokin station? Do you know what the difference would be?
Okay. Try
You talked about the voltage studies or load studies you had done from Minokin to Menards. Have you done any from Sterling to?
It would be better because it's only halfway. Okay. I mean, half the distance, so it should be better, just, you know.
Okay. As far as the load study from Minokin to Menards' proposed site, is there a way that we could get MDU was able to provide a printout. Could we get a printout of that?
Yeah, I could do that. I just call my consultant. Sure.
Okay.
Can you call that a late exhibit, Ryan, or something?
Yeah, could we get that as a late filed exhibit? And
if you want it, we have to.
Would there be an objection from either parties?
No.
Okay.
No, Your Honor.
Probably call that late filed exhibit A or 1.
What's the last capital exhibit?
Last one. Are you going to introduce E still? It's a little confusing because we removed a couple, but let's just call it G. We'll put it before it'll be late filed exhibit G.
Okay.
That's the voltage study?
Voltage yes. Drop study.
Yeah. Voltage drop, okay.
G, you said, Your Honor?
G.
Do you know, you talked about reliability and customer outages. Do you have any reports generated that could be turned in as well, any sort of a readout so we could see what the last few years look like?
Yeah.
Could we get that as a late filed exhibit as well, possibly? I'm guessing I?
What was the requested exhibit?
Outage information or report.
You'll be able to produce that as a late filed exhibit? Okay.
No objection.
Sure. Just a clarification, Mr. Lipp, will that be an outage record for the sub or for the line?
Well, what do you want?
I didn't make the request. I just wanted to
clarify. Mr. Coons, if I could ask, what was MDU's? Was that for the line for the sub? Can we get from the Minokin sub then?
Sure. The breaker that's going to serve this line?
Yes, that'd be correct.
You're writing this down?
Yeah.
All right, there was some talk with MDU about potential customer contribution to construction. How about Capital Electric? Would there be any cost on Menards going forward?
No cost to them.
Are you aware of any new applications in the area, any new customers or any other potential growth?
Not to my knowledge.
What kind of impact would this have on your members, Capital Electric?
Huge.
In what ways?
Well, it's a big load. I mean, you know, we serve, you know, pasture out of these 11 services. I think two are pasture wells and one's a signal light. So, yeah, this is huge for Capital Electric.
What kind of, does it have any impact on rates for your members at all?
I would think so. I'll have to, when Lars gets up here, he can answer that.
Do you know, has there been a decline in customers to Capital in the area at all, or from that Minocan sub at all?
I don't think so. I would say no.
So the length of an extension as proposed by Capital would be 1 mile. Is that correct? And so that's, I apologize, I became a lawyer, so I didn't have to do math, but that's what, 5,800 some odd feet. So there's the difference proposed by, there's a little over 6,000 feet, I think, extension proposed by MDU. Why is there such a big difference? We're looking at $80,000 in cost here. In your opinion, what's that difference?
Between our price and their price?
Yes.
They have to upgrade their sub, and then they have to upgrade their overhead line, and then they have to put in a new line from their overhead to the site. So it's like, you know, there's three pieces of the puzzle here that they have to do to get to the site.
In your opinion, does Capital have to upgrade the Sterling sub in order to provide service here?
Well, that's for a backup, okay. If, you know, for more reliability, but we could serve it from our Minocan sub with just the mile extension, and that's what we do.
Is there any plan to upgrade that Sterling sub?
If we get this load, maybe, but otherwise, I don't know. It's Central Powers now, and it's not in the near future, I wouldn't say.
Mr. Lean is wondering on the existing single phase that goes south to the site right now that you would be upgrading to a three phase.
Okay.
What's the current voltage on that?
7,200.
Would you need any transformers along that line?
Nope. I won't even come out of the ground. I'm just gonna go straight down to the site because we already come out of the ground with those triangles to serve the houses there. So I'll just put in two new phases, and at the real ends I'll have to splice, but I won't put an enclosure there.
So they would stay at 7,200 volts?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Again, Mr. Lipp, thanks for being here. On the Sterling sub, you said that there's no plans to upgrade that sub. In your opinion, do you need to upgrade that sub to provide effective, reliable service?
No. Because I can to serve this site, is that what we're talking
Correct.
About? Correct. No, because we can serve it out of Minocan. So.
And so I recall for MDU on their substation, they could, I don't know what the technical term is, but they could pull in power from the east or the west.
I can do that with Minocan too.
Okay, so that's the same. What's the technical term for that?
Loop feed or whatever. I can back feed it through, you know, if the this is transmission now. If the transmission line goes down, we can back feed it
right
through this way or coming out of Bismarck.
let's see here. Are you the witness to ask about the difference in cost? Okay. Let's see. Then I believe you would be the correct one to speak to this. One of the criteria, and you spoke a little bit about this, but I want to drill in a little deeply. One of the criteria is which suppliers extended electric service would best serve orderly and economic development of electric service in the general area. So you're both going to have to make some new investments to serve. MDU has to spend a little bit more. Those investments will benefit some of the customers that they have, a cluster of concentrated customers in McKenzie. Even though it's speculation how much this is going to grow, clearly by some of the criteria here, we're supposed to think about those things and think about how the service is going to grow in that general area. Do you think with a new large business creating 200 to 240 jobs, it's likely that we're going to see that area grow and with housing developments and other service providers?
Well, there's no school. There's nothing there. So I would think a few people will live out there, but I would think most of them would drive back and forth. But that's just my opinion.
Okay. You said that the Capital Electric customers would benefit in a huge way, but can you be a little more specific about what you mean in terms of the benefits they will realize? We saw in the calculation on MDU how much money would be returned to the company, which would help, you know, stave off rate increases. We don't have the benefit of that type of calculation yet. Maybe we'll get that, but he'll talk about that. Yeah. And then are there other benefits that your customers would realize from the three-phase, the addition of that three-phase line?
No. Just unless there's another consumer that wants three-phase on this mile. But
okay. And then since Menards is the only user of that three-phase, and you probably – would it be correct to assume you wouldn't be doing this if adding the two phases if they weren't coming in there? Then how come they don't have to share in the cost of that?
Well, according to our guidelines, we served the new county shop, and that was about the same thing. So we, you know, because of the load is so great, we thought they put an all electric heat at the county shop, so we figured this would be about the same. So we just said we'll pay for that, and we'll you know, you don't have to pay for that.
You'll make it up
so
in there.
Yeah, we'll make it up.
Okay.
Be fair. So.
Okay. I think that's all my questions for you, Mr. Lipp. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Ron, for your testimony and for your work for Capital for all those years. You got another decade left in you, figure?
Yeah.
Commissioner Fedorchak was asking about the line extension policy, and not so much for this case, but just curious, so you know, I hear as much about the co-op extension policy as I do for investor-owned in the West. So if I wanted to build a new farm out there, would I have to pay for the line extension?
If it's over a quarter mile, yes.
So what's the cutoff of just over a quarter mile? How much load do they have to get before you don't have to pay?
We don't know. I mean, I don't know that. It's been a quarter of a mile, and it doesn't matter what the load is.
So if it's over a quarter mile, you always. I don't think I understood what you're telling.
Well, okay. If you want to build a house, I'm sorry, you can go. We'll go a quarter of a mile. So anything over a quarter of a mile, you have to give us a contribution to aid in construction.
Okay. They don't have to do that, and it's over a quarter mile because the amount of load that they're. Okay, so what is that amount of load that's a discussion point that
right.
Lars would have with the
that's
with the board?
Yeah.
Okay, and that kind of leads into my next one, is that I'm, like I said, more familiar with MDU's relationship with the transmission, but with you and Central Power, so you don't own those lines anymore. Central Power owns them. So if the upgrades and costs for Central Power has, that would affect your costs just like anybody else's. And so have you Central will, if approved, well, I shouldn't say approved, if we would reject MDUs and it ends up back in you guys, does Central Power have to have a vote of something to build that mile of transmission line?
No, this is distribution line.
Distribution, okay.
Transmission is fine. That's along the
MCG. Okay, make sure that's clear then. Okay, so you'll call this. This is a distribution line, even though it's a mile.
Right. Okay. Distribution, the 7200 line.
Based on the size of it. Fair enough. Okay. Does Capital have to do any voting inside your membership to approve this?
No.
So that's just your decision. It's okay to do it?
Well, the board's.
Has the board approved this?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's in the record somewhere?
I would think so,
Just a question. We can sort through that, I guess. Okay. I think... Oh, I know what it was. Last line of questions. Looking at your Exhibit B, it's starting on the left side coming across. It's Amoco Pipeline. I'm guessing that's probably the NuStar line.
Yep.
There's some numbers on there. Is that you providing service to the pipeline? Like coming across from the left, you see a one that looks right on top of the pipeline.
No.
What are those things?
Those are breakers. That's a 25 4-H breaker.
Okay.
And we call it an RO1 on our system. So if that opens, we know, the lineman will go out there and say, hey, the breaker's open.
So do you have any pump stations on this pipeline that you serve?
No. But we cross under it.
So I wonder who provides power for the pump stations on the pipeline. Maybe they just don't, have too long a run, I guess. Okay, that was my only question. I just was trying to lead in if there's... Mm-hmm. So there's no three-phase anywhere in this grid other than at the substations.
Along the... south side of the interstate.
No, what I mean, other places a farmer might have three-phase power for a grain dryer or nothing, huh? Have you had a lot of requests for farmers and grain drying to get three-phase?
All single-phase, though.
No three-phase, even with the big dryers, huh? Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Is there a road that comes from the interstate along 249th Street?
No.
Where your distribution line travels, or
there's a road that goes up to account 16. Then it's field from that 16 going north.
So account 16 is at a residence.
That's correct.
So that person, if they're coming off the interstate, would come in off the interstate and drive past the west side of McKenzie, and then along the south side of McKenzie for a mile, and then go north to his or her residence. Okay. You talked about your three-phase interrupter, and if I understood you right, it's being run as a single phase.
Yeah, triple single, we call it.
And you run it now as a single phase because there is nobody out there using three-phase. And this way, if one person gets interrupted, the rest don't?
Well, one phase. You got A phase, B phase, C phase, and we try to balance the load. So we got 10 consumers on A, 10 consumers on B, 10 consumers on C. So the breaker, if a squirrel goes on A, it'll kick the breaker out, but these 20 will stay on.
Okay.
But if I flip a switch and all, for the three-phase breaker, if that squirrel on A phase, now they're all... it's going to open up the whole breaker, so all 30 of the people will be out until we go out and clear the fault.
So 20 of your consumers probably wouldn't like this so well. Is that fair to say? Because they would lose power every time there's an interruption instead of a third of the time.
Right. Well, that would be this. Right, okay.
If you get this load, that would be the case?
No, we would probably visit with Menards, and he was. Is it all right if I talk here? He was this morning. The Menards guy said he was afraid because if you lose a phase, it creates heat. Well, you can get motor savers on the motors. So if you do lose a phase, these motor savers will, kick the motor out, but I don't know. They must be expensive because he didn't bring that up. So, but here, I would suspect because the 10 consumers on this line, we'd probably do go three-phase trip.
Has there been any discussion? And Commissioner Fedorchak brought this up that this could happen since we didn't have the Capital Electric information in advance, so couldn't ask this question of previous witnesses. But so you would come into the Menard property on the northeast corner of their property. MDU would be coming in on the northwest corner of their property. I've never been out there. I don't know what their plans are, but does that make a difference to them? Has anything been discussed about a benefit of one way or the other, which corner?
No. No benefit.
Okay. Let's say from your perspective, worst-case scenario, and this load goes to MDU, does it continue to make sense then for Capital Electric to maintain that mile of single phase going east and then another mile going south and looping around to the railroad light just for those two services, or should this be an all-or-nothing deal?
No, we continue to serve that those loads.
And I think the last thing that I have is you said your Minocan substation has capacity enough to serve this load, and your Sterling substation would not. There'd probably be enough for part of it, right. But can you give me numbers of what's needed and what they can provide to show what the capacity of these substations are compared to what this load would need?
Well, I've got a 5,000 kVA transformer at Minocan, and so this is a 1,000 kVA load or 1 megawatt load. And I've got a 450 kVA transformer at Sterling, so that it wouldn't serve this load, not all of the load.
Okay, but so your Minocan one is not just barely big enough. It's big enough by plenty.
Well, the existing consumers, we got a 5,000. I think our load there is 2,200. So we've got,
if you added another 1,000, you would still have quite a bit of capacity for additional growth around this area.
That's correct.
Off of that substation.
Off the Minocan substation.
Okay. You said it's currently about 2,200 being used? Okay.
No, 2,200 kW.
Right. Okay, thank you. I have no other questions.
Mr. Olson, you have some follow-up questions?
There was some I don't remember if it was Mr. Kalk, Commissioner Kalk, or it was one of you, one of the commissioners that asked about the going to slaughter this, the three-phase breaker or interrupter or whatever, and if it's tripped, it's going to trip more consumers. That same thing would happen for MDU is if they had the same type of thing at their substation, because it's going to trip everyone as well.
That's correct.
Okay. Nothing further.
Wade.
Mr. Koontz?
Mr. Lipp, I've got a couple questions here. Bear with me. You mentioned that the Minocan sub is automated. Is that right?
That's correct.
Is that on the transmission side only, or both transmission and distribution?
Distribution and transmission.
And you also mentioned we wouldn't be here if this was just a house to serve Ron Lipp out in the country. Are you aware of, did you say that? Didn't you say that?
Yes, I did.
Are you aware of a situation where Montana, Dakota has refused service to a residential customer in a rural area?
Well, you're baiting me here, but I'm sure you know, but I don't recall.
And in fact, is it Montana, Dakota's policy explained by Ms. Averly similar to Capital Electric's that if a particular customer doesn't have sufficient load to justify the investment, the customer has to make a capital contribution? You heard her testify to that? And you basically have the same type of policy where it's longer than a mile, you require a customer contribution. Is that right? So the point of if it's an extension, so it doesn't become an unreasonable burden on your other customers to make that investment, correct? And as I understand this, the proposed two phases that you're adding, you said you would bury it along the existing one phase, you wouldn't come out anywhere. So the only thing that three-phase line would serve is a Minocan site, right?
That's correct.
it wouldn't provide a benefit to any other customers.
Nope.
That's all.
Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Lipp, we're wondering at the interconnect of the current single phase and the current three phase, would there be any additional need for a transformer or anything there heading south?
No.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Mr. Lipp, I'm going to ask you, because now that I've seen both plans, I need an engineer to walk through this with me. I want to better understand the duplication of services and infrastructure. So you have a substation that's adequate to serve this load. MDU would have to upgrade theirs. So in your opinion, is that a duplication?
Yes.
Help me understand in the scheme of utility infrastructure investments, how big is duplicating a substation? Is that a significant duplication? Is it?
Yeah.
Are these among the most costly pieces of the delivery of service to customers?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the substation is, yeah, that's, you need to, you know, to step down the voltage, but the substation is huge for investment-wise, yes.
And since that substation in Minocan is larger than what you currently need, can you speak to why that is? Do you expect growth to in that area to fill that demand in the near future? So
I hope so, but yeah, we put that, you know, all our substations were have a little bigger capacity rather than so for future growth, so we don't have to, because it is such a big investment.
And when was that constructed? Sorry. I thought you might have said it earlier.
During my 27 years, because it was, we had the, see, we test the oil in them every 2 years to see if there's gases involved. And this Minocan substation had some acetylene gas. So the tester said, you have to get it out of service immediately or something's going to happen. So I think that was, I want to say 12 years ago.
When upgraded?
Changed it to a 5 MVA.
Okay. Okay, so that's a substation. You have to invest in a three-phase line, add two phases to a single-phase line. Okay, so to serve the Menards location. And my understanding is MDU has a three-phase line there that they have to upgrade to some extent. Do you consider that yours a duplication of what they already have? Why not?
Because ours is underground, theirs is overhead, theirs is a delta, ours is a Y, and they'd have to add, you know, insulators and more poles.
Okay. And then the other piece that they have to add is the line, the 1,800 feet to actually get to the property. Would you grant that because they're serving McKenzie, that line might be needed down the road and serve customers in that area?
No. They just need that to serve this.
Okay. Is there anything else you think I'm missing on the duplication of services? Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
No, sir.
Commissioner Christman? Mr. Olson, anything further?
Nothing further.
Yes.
Mr. Kuntz, go ahead.
Mr. Lipp, let's talk about the substation for a little bit. You heard that Mr. Lowstreeter testified that if a customer located McKenzie, that, for example, a convenience store that needed Y service, and they would have to make that same conversion from their Delta system to a Y three-phase, would they not? Do you disagree with this testimony?
Yeah, I think you can serve that with the Delta. It depends on what the load is.
Okay, so if the load was sufficient that it needed a Y.
Then you need it, right. Then you'd have to upgrade the substation.
Okay. And would you consider that a duplication if they had to upgrade at that point to serve that customer in the city of McKenzie?
Probably.
So they shouldn't serve that customer in McKenzie with the WANDOT service. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they should. We'd
give it to Capital Electric.
There you go.
Yeah. And you said that they have to add some new poles. Where would they have to add new poles to upgrade their
I'm thinking along the line, you know, because they have to add a neutral, and, you know, it's going to add a little more weight to the poles. I know if I were going to do it, I'd add a few more poles in that line. But, you know, that's just my thinking.
you saw Mr. Paul's calculation.
Yeah, that's true.
And you said that you thought that was reasonable?
Yeah.
You mentioned the fact that generally overhead line can be subject to more exposure for outages. If an outage occurs on an underground line, isn't it typically harder to repair than an overhead outage?
It sure is. You got to find it, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got 8 miles of underground between Menards and Minokin, correct?
That's correct.
And there's about a little over a mile from the McKenzie substation to the Minokin site.
Correct.
That's all I have.
Mr. Norrell, do you have additional questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Any commissioners? Okay.
Thank you.
Nothing further?
Nothing further.
Okay, Mr. Lipp, thank you. You can step down. You can call your next witness.
I call Lars Nygren to the stand.
Mr. Nygren. Perjury is a Class C felony in North Dakota, punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum of 5 years imprisonment, or both. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you say your name for the record?
For the record, I'm Ordean Nygren, with the nickname of Lars.
Okay. And can you tell me where you're currently employed?
I'm the general manager of Cap Electric Cooperative.
And how long have you been in that role?
I'm in my 31st year.
And can you tell me if you had any other experiences with any other cooperatives before that time?
Prior to Cap Electric, I served as the office or the manager of the Minot office for Verendry Electric in Minot.
Okay. Are you familiar with the area that MDU has applied to serve southeast of the McKenzie area?
Yes.
Okay. You've heard a bunch of testimony today. Can you tell us, there was a lot of discussion about the benefit to customers. Can you tell me the benefit that would result to your customers if you were to receive this load?
Well, I think we've heard the investment costs that both parties would have to make to get to the site. If I recall the testimony, we have about a $45,000 investment to make, and MDU has about a $126,000 investment to make. And our revenue was reported by in the prior testimony to be higher. So when we look and want to talk about a rate of return, we heard the testimony from, I think it's obvious that the benefits that we would drive from a higher rate with a lower cost are even greater than what MDU would derive in their framework. The numbers that I think we looked at were just on our rate of return with the existing customers, and that was about 5%. And if we look at with Menards load, it doubles it to about 10%.
So how does that benefit your customers, your other customers, besides
From the standpoint that we already have a higher rate than MDU, getting a large load such as this would spread the costs out over more kilowatt hours and would drive more benefits to the existing customers, hopefully making us more rate competitive in the future.
So based on what you said, you think that capital can serve this area more economically and still earn an adequate return based on what you just said?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have an opinion of which supplier, whether it's MDU or capital, would best serve the orderly and economic development of electric service in this general area?
Yes. From our perspective, we're already serving in the general area. We have three services that are adjacent to the existing site, albeit single phase. But we don't have to cross MDU's facilities in order to extend service to Menards. MDU has to cross underneath our facilities in order to get to the site. So from that perspective alone, we think it's more orderly, and having MDU move into that site, we're going to ultimately end up in a checkerboard effect, whereby they're going to have service here, and what I should say in the city of, or in the village of McKenzie, then cross over us and then have service to the site. We're in between already. So now we start the checkerboard effect. If there's additional loads out there, that's yet to be determined where that is, but we end up with a checkerboard effect on who's serving where.
Mr. Lipp already testified to some of this, and maybe you can expound on a little bit. Would approval of MDU's application result in wasteful duplication of investment or service in the area?
Well, from my perspective, that's part of the reason that we objected to the service here. We think we already have adequate capacity in an existing substation and have a lower cost investment to extend service to the site of $45,000. So the capacity doesn't need to be, as far as I'm concerned, MDU doesn't need to upgrade their substation. We already have existing capacity in the area. And our extension of facilities is, 2.8 times less than their investment cost just to get to the site. I think the site investment costs are probably a horse apiece. I think one was $65,000 and some change, and one was $66,000. So on an estimate basis, that's pretty close estimating from two parties that were not part together in estimating. So I would say the existing costs on the site are, or the anticipated costs on the site are the same.
You've heard testimony today that McKenzie is unincorporated. Is that your understanding as well?
That's correct.
Do you know when some of the property there was platted?
My recollection is when I went back to research this, part of the main body of the town was platted in 1902. And then the west part, I thought, was platted in 1906. That's as much as I can recall of the platting.
So there hasn't been much going on there for 110 years?
At least currently. No new plats, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And nothing in my tenure at Capital Electric.
Will service of either MDU or Capital in the area unreasonably interfere with the service of the other? Do you have an opinion as to that?
Well, again, we go back to the fact that MDU has to cross underneath our facilities. Now, that probably would be not considered so egregious from a physical standpoint, because I can recognize that we do cross each other on occasion in a physical sense. I would suggest, however, that this would probably have more of an economic interference on Capital Electric from the standpoint that we've established single-phase service in the area. I don't think we should just be relishing being this provider of last resort to railroad signals and then denied the privilege to serve a large load.
So based on the investment and the rate of return, you think your rate of your investment you've testified is less, and you also think because of that and your rates being slightly higher that your rate of return is even going to be larger. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
Which benefits all your members?
That would be correct.
Nothing further.
Mr. Kuntz.
Thank you. Mr. Nygren, you've been manager of Capital Electric for how long?
Since September of 1983.
And before that, you worked for the electric co-op in Minot.
Render Electric from September of 75.
So, Mr. Nygren, you would agree with me there's more to providing electric service to a end-use customer than just the last mile of poles and wires, would you not?
There's an entire infrastructure, yes.
You need generation, correct?
Correct.
You need transmission, correct?
Correct.
And all those things go into making up what becomes the rates to the customer in the end, correct?
That would be correct.
And you heard the testimony today from Ms. Aberle and Mr. Manor that Montana Dakota's cost to provide service to them is about $60,000 a year less than your proposed cost, correct?
I believe that would be correct, yes.
Do you have any reason to disagree with that?
Not at this time, no.
So then the cost to provide service, the total cost to provide service is reflected in the rates to the customer by Montana is Montana Dakota is significantly less than that of Capital Electric. Is that not correct?
Well, it's less. The significance of judgment call.
You talked about that there hasn't been much new growth in McKenzie since the area was platted, and that Montana Dakota shouldn't be allowed to serve this particular load adjacent to its franchised area because it doesn't have capacity on its existing substation, whereas Capital Electric's got that capacity. Is that right?
That's one of the puzzles that was, or pieces of the puzzle you lack, yes.
Are you suggesting that Montana Dakota should have gold-plated its substation at McKenzie to add capacity it didn't need before it needed it?
No.
Does Capital Electric offer any demand control rates, such as Mr. Manor testified, or something that Menards is very interested in?
Yes, we can. Currently, our only demand controlling rates we offer in comparison would be on three-phase loads is to irrigation. But we do have a complete demand response control system called a TWAX.
But that you didn't make a rate available to Menards for that?
No, Menards at the time requested existing rates available, and currently we do not have a rate on the books to take advantage of offering what we can get, as you mentioned, from generation and power supply. Basin Electric provides a interruptible rate. At this juncture, Central Power provides that interruptible rate, and we don't have it on the books since we just consolidated with Central Power.
So when Mr. Manor testified that he was told that these are the rates that are available and that's it, was he telling the truth?
At the time.
Is there something changed since that time?
Well, I guess we'd be certainly willing to sit down with Menards and work with them on an interruptible rate if that's what they're interested in. We weren't aware that they were looking for having complete standby generation on site.
What about something less than complete interruptible rates? What about the demand control rate where they could would use something like they could shed a particular piece of their load?
Do you have
a rate like that available?
We'd have to look so that you're, if I can paraphrase, I think what you're saying is just partial shedding of the load. Shed two buildings instead of three or four. Well, then the rates would have to be separated.
You don't have anything like that now?
Not at this particular time.
And you said you thought your return would be better, in part because you're charging more. Is that right?
Yeah, it sounds to reason to me that we have a higher revenue stream coming in.
So, but Capital Electric, part of its revenue stream goes to pay to its generation provider, correct?
Correct. We have a higher cost if that's where you're going.
Well, my point is, Mr. Nygren, you've got to pay Basin and you've got to pay Central Power for transmission. Is that right?
We pay Central Power directly now, but fair enough.
Okay. You've not presented any sort of study here before the commission to determine what your margin is after you pay Central Power, to determine what your return is and what's available to your other customers after you pay that margin, have you?
Not at this time, no.
So your testimony about you think your return would be better than Montana Dakota's is based upon speculation. You've not done the study.
Well, it's judgment, yes, that's correct.
How much has Capital Electric's load grown in the last 5 years?
In the last 5 years?
Right.
Peak load?
Total consumption.
Kilowatt hours?
Right.
Uh, I'm sorry, I can't recall in the last 5 years. I I just don't know at this time.
What about peak consumption?
Well, in the last 5 years in peak consumption, I'm aware last winter we grew 10 megawatts from 70 to 80 megawatts, but in the last 5 years, I can't answer you there. Normally, we have about, rule of thumb, a 3-megawatt load growth.
So you've been, and you grew 10 megawatts last year?
Our winter peak, due to the extreme cold in January. I remember that because it was such an exception. We're generally a summer peaking system. And we moved, I want to say, about 3 megawatts over our summer peak to a winter peak.
And what's all that load growth done to your customer rates?
We've raised rates in the last 3 years, principally due to wholesale power cost increases from Base Electric Power Cooperative. Generally, that's been part of the upgrades that have taken place at some of the generating plants for environmental purposes.
And who sets the rates for your customers?
Board of directors.
Of Capital Electric?
Of Capital Electric.
And so if a customer has a complaint with a particular rate, they can't go to this commission and complain about that rate and ask that it be restudied, can they?
No.
Or if they have a service problem with a particular aspect of your service, they can't go to this commission and ask that it be investigated, can they?
Not to my knowledge.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Norrell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Nygren, how would this investment improve the feasibility of the system, capital system, overall?
Overall, I guess I wouldn't know specifically. I can just say generally, we don't serve many loads of this magnitude. As you can see by our map up there, they're all generally single-phase farm loads. So not many of these come by in your tenure. So I'm suggesting that given the revenue stream we've seen here in our investment, in other words, we have a $44,000 line extension investment and a revenue stream, wasn't it over $500,000, that was showing there's a significant rate of return. So hopefully it would benefit our entire membership. We're only spreading it over 18,000 consumers. If I understood MDU to say they had 130,000 consumers and two-thirds of them were in the state of North Dakota. So we've got a smaller base spread an equal or greater than return over.
There was some conversation earlier with, I believe, Commissioner Kalkin, one of MDU's witnesses, about possible long-term rates, and it was discussed how MDU, being a regulated utility, would have to come to the commission for rate increases. Does Capital have the capacity or the ability to offer Menards a long-term fixed rate at all?
Long-term fixed rate, guaranteed rate? Yeah. We can enter into a contract rate, but we do not have contract rates, if that's what you're asking.
You don't have any current contract
no.
rates? No. Do other co-ops do that on occasion?
Well, let me phrase it this way. When we were negotiating with Walmart, we offered them and made it available to all others a guaranteed rate relative to an all-electric facility. But that's since expired.
How long are we looking at on a term?
Those were 5 years.
5 years. There's some conversation about demand control rates or interruptible service rates that you had with Mr. Coons. Do you know what rate you would be available to, you could offer Menards today?
We do not have a rate on our books. Keep in mind we just consolidated with Central Power on January 31st, and we would have to develop a rate pursuant to what Menards' requests are, keeping in mind that it needs to be made available to all consumers in that class.
So there's no current tariff or anything?
No, that's what he was referring to, I believe, when he said, and our request is to give us existing rates, and that's what we did.
Do you know, does MDU's line currently cross Capital Electric's line, the MDU line that goes south into
McKenzie, does that currently cross Capital's line?
I would say no from this perspective, that we have a transmission line on the south side of the road, but MDU has underbuilt on that transmission line. So we just share facilities and right away. So, yeah, they would cross the distribution line, underbuilt, underground, going to serve the town of McKenzie. But I think they were there first. So, in all fairness, we crossed underneath MDU. And that's our three-phase distribution line that Mr. Lipp testified to. And that's just my speculation that I think you said they were 1928, and MDU didn't come into existence till 48, so.
You mean Capital.
Or Capital, excuse me.
Do you know, is that three-phase line, do you know, is that at 7,200 volts?
Correct.
No further questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thanks, Mr. Nygren, for being here. I was just going to ask you when you started serving in this area and why Capital hasn't been serving McKenzie or wasn't selected to serve McKenzie way back in the day. You maybe just answered that for me. You came into existence in 48.
Yes, I believe there was service already extended to McKenzie, and Capital hadn't been born till 1948. So,
has there ever been discussions between you and MDU for you taking over that service area, McKenzie?
Only discussion I remember with MDU was in regard to the farm site south of McKenzie. What was the infamous name we were talking about?
The Rybergs.
Rybergs. I believe it's at the right farm site. And I'm thinking of, we had talked at one time of trading some services, and that was one that the MDU was willing to give us.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we haven't had any discussions.
Would this Menards facility be your largest load?
No, perhaps not. No, it wouldn't be our largest load.
What are some of your other large loads that you have?
Our largest load is Walmart because it's an all-electric facility.
Okay.
And depending upon how you would look at it, since these are multiple facilities, the University of Mary is also one of our larger consumers, along with the base electric headquarters.
So I can kind of compare, what's the demand at those places?
Wow. Trying to recall here. I don't know what the collective demand at the University of Mary is because there's multiple meters out there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the Walmart is at least 2.5 megawatts with electric heat.
Oh, okay. When they contacted your company, were you aware that they were looking at comparing services?
We were aware that they had met with MDU, and we had sensed that they were looking for us to get into a bidding war with MDU and their economic development rate. At least that was my sense, that they were looking to play one off against the other.
Mm-hmm. And what you heard the Menard fellow's testimony this morning, that he wasn't very impressed with your customer service and your company's overall efforts to give them a competitive bid. What's your response to that?
Well, sorry that we didn't come into as good gracious. We thought we were at least fulfilling all of their requests. They requested the application from service and what our rates were, and we provided that.
Mm-hmm.
Also sense that they did a same request with MDU, And when they looked at and perhaps saw that our rates were above, that was their key directive to, again, seek more out of MDU. We haven't, to my knowledge, heard from Menards this year.
You heard MDU say that they didn't provide them a special deal. They're providing them a published tariff that is approved by us, and there was no extra kind of.
And that's what we did.
Okay. But if you had, it's curious to me that this would be one of your largest loads. They came to you. You clearly want them, and you didn't tell them that you had this potential for a more competitive rate that you could probably work with them on. We might not be here today if that had happened.
Well, I guess I don't want to count my chickens until they're hatched. So from the standpoint that we'd be willing to work with them, we did not know, at least from my perspective, that they're looking at an interruptible rate, nor did we know they were going to put in standby generation. So perhaps we dropped the ball by not pursuing that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd certainly be interested in pursuing it now that we know that.
Okay. One of the other issues Menards talked about this morning was that in other areas they have worked with both cooperatives and independently owned utilities and have a preference for the IOUs, and he talked about clean power. What did you take that to mean? He called it they provide us with clean power. And that's of high value to them. What does that mean to you?
I don't know what that means. I can't interpret what his definition of power is.
Okay. Let me
answer it in this fashion. The source of power in the area, we have a joint substation with MDU in East Bismarck that feeds their transmission line and feeds our transmission line. So I'm not sure how you get the electrons to get dirty on one end and clean on the other, but I would think they should be sufficiently the same.
Okay. I think this is my last question. The Monocan sub, which has extra capacity now, are you anticipating growth in that area? If that's one of the key factors of duplication because there's capacity there now. If it continues to grow as it is in Bismarck, you could be using up that capacity and having to expand there in the near future. Am I not right?
Well, the Monocan sub is more of a rural sub. Depends on how fast and how much load growth moves out towards the east. In part, that is part of the service area agreement that we have with MDU in and around Bismarck. And I'll stand corrected, but if I recall, generally south of the interstate, except for the city of Lincoln, the futuristic growth, at least near Bismarck, is more towards MDU in my recollection of the service area agreement, and I'll stand corrected if I'm missing something, but I'll let he can cross-examine me and correct. If I'm wrong.
If we could get a copy of the service area agreement added to the record, it may not be super relevant, but it can't hurt, so I'd appreciate having that added, the map. And I think that's all my questions for now. Thank you.
If I could, there was questions relative to the Sterling sub and the ability to upgrade. I could offer that I have had conversations with Tom Mellon, the general manager of Central Power Electric Cooperative in Minot, asked them to see what it would take to upgrade that substation. My recall of the conversation that he got back to me was that they have three 833 kV transformers in inventory at approximate book value of $10,000. They'd need to upgrade the reclosures or the regulators out there at an approximate value of about $8,000, and the high side switches to refusing for about $2,000, and just doubled that for labor. So they estimated roughly about a $40,000 cost to upgrade the Sterling substation to a 2,500 kVA substation. Because I think that's one of the questions you'd asked.
Thanks.
Mr. Olson, are you going to provide the service area agreement as a late file exhibit?
I take official notice of that. Isn't that a documented case, Ryan, with us?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was approved.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we've
should
got
be and we can, here, okay. But we can certainly.
Yeah, we can take official notice of it. Okay. That's fine. So, Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Lars, for being here today and visiting and stopping by. You know, it's kind of one of those things like I started out with, that you and MDU have been sharing customers and discussion for many, many years. I should say sharing customers, but debating about customers and who's serving whom for many, many years. I'm sure you were front and center in the debate here a few years ago with the that ended up in the service agreement, no doubt. Were you right? Do you remember that pretty well?
Yes.
Outside of this discussion today, what other friction points do you see between you and MDU around the Bismarck area? Is there, you know, is there several places that you're watching close trying to figure it out, or is this kind of like the one area that is still kind of a gray area with who might be serving things?
Well, from my perspective, I don't know of any friction points around the Bismarck area. We just made an agreement pursuant to our service area agreement, I believe, to let MDU extend service to an existing customer on Divide Avenue. With the expansion and all of that, it just cleans up the area. And so I'd suggest we're very amiable from our perspectives here in the Bismarck area, and this is one of the just large loads that came along, and obviously both are interested in serving.
Sure. Do you think there's any value of you, or have you tried to sit down with MDU and work out a service area agreement on this area since this kind of became an issue?
Not up to this time, no.
Do you think there's a value in it?
We're certainly open.
Because one of the things that your colleague testified about, that it's a fair point that, you know, there may be 200 and some jobs, but there's no school in the town, and what additional growth in the area, it'll remain to be seen, I guess. But I'm trying to see if there's other opportunities, that if there are other points between you and MDU that maybe you could work out several different things in this together. But that's, I guess, separate discussion you folks will all have to have. So for your perspective, this is kind of like the big 10,000-pound gorilla in the room that we need to get solved right now. There's not other things that you're aware of that are coming down the pike that may result in these kind of proceedings.
No, I don't know of any this juncture.
And Julie talked quite a bit about this, Commissioner Fedorchak, but Menards come to you and said, hey, we want to build this, and you'd have given them the rate they were looking for. They would have needed nothing from us to just start building, correct?
Repeat.
If Menards came to you and said, hey, we want to build this stuff, and you were happy, they were happy with the rate, there'd have been nothing this commission would have had to do in anything, correct?
If I understand what you're suggesting here is, if they had not requested service from MDU and only requested service from Capital Electric, Capital Electric could have extended service, correct?
But there would, if they had...
And MDU wouldn't have had an opportunity to object.
That's what I was trying to get out of from your viewpoint, is that if they worked it out with you, would MDU have any right to go in and request that they serve this load? Had Menards asked you and it worked out an agreement with you?
No, because I don't believe we would have been interfering with their system.
Okay, fair enough. The discussion about from going forward is Commissioner Fedorchak has talked quite a bit about all the different factors that we look at. It comes down to me to a couple issues, you know, the three phase where it's available at and the cost. And so do you feel that you've been given a fair shake with Menards as to what is really available from you to them? Do you feel that you've presented your best deal to Menards and they've had a chance to consider that?
Well, except from the standpoint that now they want to look at an interruptible framework. At least that's what we learned today. Whether that's the ultimate thing they want or not, we don't know. But at the time, what they requested from us was our existing rates, and that's what we presented them. And that's all that we had to present, unfortunately.
Is Capital interested in, after these proceedings, sending anything to Menard saying, clarifying what may or may not be available to them?
Well, we'd be open. If Menard wants to pursue it, yes.
How big a factor do you think it is for this commission to consider the customer preference?
I think if I recall right, the customer preference is one of them, but not a main-bodied part of this process.
Is there any one that you think we should consider more than the other of the criteria?
The ones that I think probably weigh in are, that I've seen over the years, generally are we duplicating, is there duplication of facilities of investment? And the other one was, is are we crossing any existing facilities of the power supplier?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Commissioner Christman?
You were here when Mr. Manor was testifying, right?
Yes.
Did I misunderstand anything, or do you disagree with what I'm thinking that he said, that he got involved in this conversation just in February of this year of 2014?
I don't recall, but I'll take your word for it. Seemed to me he wasn't... our contact person was Jesse
Kane. Okay. So, did Mr. Manor never contact you?
I have not spoken to Mr. Manor.
Anybody else that you're aware of at Capital Electric?
I'm not aware, let's put it that way. But he could have. But I'm not aware. He has not visited with me. And I don't recall of any conversations with Menards, as I said, in 2014. So if he started in February, it would seem that he hadn't.
So do you feel that, in retrospect now, Capital Electric should have been doing more, maybe in the last months, to reach out to Menards and say, you know, we've reached this new deal with Central Power, and you asked for our existing rates, and here they are, but you're an important potential new customer to us, and, you know, if you'd be interested in maybe an interruptible rate, even though we don't have that yet, we've just done this merger, and we'll try and work something out with you, and try to sell the co-op?
And I agree 100% with you now that we know.
Okay. Lastly, you mentioned that approving this for MDU would cause kind of a checkerboard situation down in that area. And... implying that that's a bad thing, and I think one way of looking at that checkerboard effect, sometimes it is a bad thing. But when I think back of our service area agreements that we've approved here around Dickinson and some other communities, they are a little checkerboardy, but it seems like agreements have been reached that worked pretty well for both sides. So I guess I just point that all out. I don't want to say that necessarily the checkerboard-looking effect is all necessarily bad, but to the extent that it can be a bad thing. Now I'll get to my question. Isn't the best way to avoid that effect to sit down between the two companies before we have to sit and look at our guidelines and pick one or the other as the winner, and for the two companies to sit down and barter something because you both know that you might win and you both know that you might not win, and maybe trade a little something so that one wins this but someone else gets something else. Isn't that the way to avoid a bad checkerboard effect?
Well, bad would be everybody's agreed, so there wouldn't be anybody that would be objecting. So obviously it would be a mutually agreed upon checkerboard. So that becomes mutually agreed, so it wouldn't be considered bad.
Yeah.
Conversely, so if you haven't been able to come to an accord, I'm not sure checkerboarding is desirable by either utility.
Right. But so you do agree then that the best way to avoid a bad checkerboard effect is for the two sides to get together and iron something out?
If you can, yes.
Okay. No other questions?
Mr. Olson?
I have nothing further.
Mr. Olson, I've got an Exhibit E. Is that, were you intending to?
No.
Okay. Mr. Kuntz?
Mr. Nygren, you mentioned you had a conversation with Tom Mellon at Central Power regarding upgrade of the Sterling substation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right now, do you have a need for that upgrading that Sterling substation if you don't serve the Menards load?
Not based on the existing load, correct.
So if you upgraded that Sterling substation, would that be a unreasonable duplication?
No, I think it would be a what we would call a alternate feed source. So you'd increase the reliability into the area.
So if you upgrade your Sterling substation, that's not a duplication, but if MDU upgrades its McKinsey substation to serve the Minocan load, that's a duplication.
That would be correct, because we'd already have the existing capacity to serve on a single basis.
So, but you can go ahead and upgrade your Sterling substation, even though you've got existing capacity, but that's not a duplication.
Not if we're going to provide redundancy on our existing system.
And you said that you thought from your review that, or your understanding, that customer preference was not a main consideration in the commission's determination. Is that right?
That's what I recall.
But you also testified that if Menards had gone to you for this situation, we wouldn't even be here. Is that correct?
If my understanding is that the investor-owned utilities need a request of service from a customer.
So
I think that came out clear in the case out at Sterling.
So in that scenario, the customer preference is the only consideration in terms of whether Cap Electric gets to serve that load, isn't it?
In a rural area.
And then you talked about, well, you've offered guaranteed rates in the past. Maybe you could have, Menards in this case. Can you guarantee the rates that you're charged by your suppliers?
No.
So do you have to have exceptions to those, quote, guaranteed rates?
Well, you don't make them that long.
So they're really not much of a guarantee, are they?
They're short-term, similar to your economic development rate.
And then you mentioned that, well, now that we know what they need, we could have probably should have worked with them harder in terms of what their rate needs were. Now that you know what they...
Only on an interruptible basis.
But
our existing rates that you have are our existing rates.
Okay, and you wouldn't change those for them?
No.
And now that you know what they want and with respect to possible interruptible or demand response rates, you know that now because they've asked Montana and Dakota to provide the service.
Correct.
Before that, you didn't.
They testified today. That's when we heard.
But didn't they also testify that they inquired of someone at Capital as to whether you had a demand response type control rate available, and they were told that you did not?
Not to my knowledge.
You heard him testify to that, did you not?
Yes, I did.
Under oath?
Yes.
You're not saying he's lying, are you?
No.
That's all I have.
Mr. Norrell?
I have no questions for this witness, but at an appropriate time, I will have an evidentiary matter to discuss briefly regarding Commissioner Fedorchek's request.
Commissioner Fedorchek, any questions?
On the whole issue of customer preference, just one more question. I'm trying to understand if there's a comparable scenario with a role reverse. Say Menards was locating this facility on the edge of MDU's territory and they preferred you. Could you come to us and request to serve them in a similar way like this, and would we be looking at the same criteria? Is that feasible? Jerry's shaking his head. No. So this only happens in the rural areas? Or can Ryan?
I don't know if I can answer since I'm not on the stand. But,
all right. We can talk about that later. It strikes me that the customer service is only is downplayed by the people who it doesn't serve well, and it's a big factor for those who it does serve well. So it makes it difficult to weigh, but it's all.
Commissioner Kalk?
I don't believe I have any more questions for Mr. Nygren at this time, but I would ask that whenever, if we're getting close to being done here, that we take a break, and then I'd like to talk to my guys here a little bit and then come back, because once the hearing is closed, it's closed, and I do want to have a couple questions for Ryan and Jerry before we break the team up here.
Commissioner Christman, any further questions?
I do. I also, no questions, but I also have a question. I suppose we have to do them separately.
Sure. Mr. Olson, anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nygren. You can step down at this time. Any other witnesses?
No further witnesses, no.
Okay. Mr. Norrell, would you like to address your evidentiary issue after you and Mr. Lean have had an opportunity to speak, or would you like to take the break first?
I think it's just a matter of clarifying, and I don't know if Mr. Olson or Mr. Coons or even if Ms. Aberle would be able to help us, but we're just wanting to make sure that we take notice of the correct service area agreement and what would be the most recent one.
There is only one.
There's only one. Okay. And that is being shown as Public Utilities 07754. Does that sound?
07?
07 is the.
Yeah, about right. It's probably about 6-7 years ago. Is it about that? All right.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page here. Thank you.
It's this decade, that would be it.
Does that clarify then?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I think we can take our break at this time then.
How long, Your Honor?
How long do you need? 15 minutes enough? Or, all right, 15 minutes.
I need about two.